Hello, hello, and you know, it's Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and if you're listening, you know what's going on. This is the No Chaser. I'm back. I'm JT. I'm the co-host, and of course, the man, the main man of No Chaser is in the house. We have a special guest also. I'm going to hand it over to my main man, Mac Williams, who's the host, and he'll give you the particulars. What's up, Mac?
What's up, everybody? Glad you guys could join us for the No Chaser Show. I am Mac Williams. I got my co-host, JT, and I just wanted to tell everybody I hope you had a really, really good week. I've been without my co-host for 2 weeks, and it has been absolutely terrible. So I'm glad to have him back.
Same here.
I'm glad he's back, and I think he came back on a great week. We have with us as a guest, well, first of all, let me pay the bill. No Chaser, as all of you guys have known, is brought by Trinity Web Solutions. Trinity Web Solutions has websites, domain names, email, whatever you need for your online presence, Trinity Web Solutions has it. So please go over to trinitywebsolutions.org and go over there real now and open up an account. Just take a peek around and look and find something that you need. And go ahead and open up an account and sign up today. Okay. Excuse me, guys. Today, I have one of a guy that it's funny. I happened to see him on my Facebook page. One of my friends had put him up. And I looked the book up and everything, and I started reading about him, and I was like, oh, my God, I got to have this guy. And I remember it hitting him. It was Welton. And I said, Welton, I got to get this. I messaged him. I was like, Welton, I got to have this guy. Really good, you know, he's a really good guy, and I think I really want to have him on my show. He'd be great as a guest. And so I have on my show today the author of a book called Thug to Scholar. James A. Williams is on the show. And
He earned it. Give it to him.
I apologize. He worked real hard for that. Dr. James A. Williams is PhD, if I'm not mistaken. And James is here today to talk about the book. We're going to ask some questions. And this is about young people, about, you know, the young people and what they're going through. He's been there. He's come from a long way away to where he is a doctor now. So without further ado, James, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on the No Chaser Show, man. We really, really appreciate it, man.
Well, thank you for having me, man. I'm honored.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm really glad you came. And like I said, I like, you know, James is a good guy. I like everything about him except the fact that he likes LeBron James and the Heat. But anyway, he won't listen to that. Anyway, other than him liking the Evil Empire, he's a good dude. But I don't hold that against him.
Hey, well, anyway, I'm glad to be on the show. And then you got the name Mac Williams.
I'm a clown. But anyway, James, can you kind of go into telling us what made you, where did you come up with the book, and give us a broad picture of where you came up with the book, a little bit about yourself, and whatever God put on your heart about what to say today. You know, say what you got to say, and then we'll come up with some questions once you give us a little introduction.
Okay. Well, I started the book actually back in 2008. I was a middle school teacher at a school called Rocky Mountain Preparatory School, and I saw this young lady. She was in my class, and this guy went and grabbed her on her buttocks. And I was confused. I was watching what's going on. And she didn't get upset. And then I chastised the young boy. And then I talked with her at the class, and I was trying to find out, why did she allow this boy to, you know, to grab her butt? And throughout the conversation, I realized that she was doing it because she wanted to be cool. It wasn't necessarily that she wanted him to do it. But she didn't want anybody to think that she was a snitch or that she wasn't with the in crowd of the girls that was perpetuating this promiscuous behavior. So
she wanted to accept it.
Say what now? She wanted to be accepted.
She wanted to accept
it. Absolutely. So
okay.
So when I went home, I started thinking, and I was like, man, why would this girl allow, you know, somebody to do this just so she'd be accepted? And then I started thinking back over my life. I started reflecting and thinking about, well, why was I trying to be hard, or why was I trying to be a thug? Why was I trying to be pop? You know, I wanted to be thug-like. And it just started making me realize I wanted to be accepted by my peers, and I wanted to fit in, and I wanted to be cool. I didn't want to get picked on. I think now, the term we use a lot is bullying. But back in the days, we didn't want to be no chump. We didn't want to be no punk or anything like that. So we tended to act outside of our character for what God designed for us really to be.
Right. Okay.
So that's how the book came about.
Okay. Now I'm a substitute teacher. Part of what I do is a substitute teacher, and I see this every day where guys who, kids are really good at heart. I'm starting to realize kids are really good at heart, and they're very intelligent, very smart, but they're very distracted and trying to fit in with other kids or trying to be accepted or what have you. And I see that. And ever since I've started reading your book and know you, I've been seeing it more and more, and I'm like, okay, that's what he talked about. And a lot of these kids act out, class clowns, all these things to be accepted and to be the quote-unquote cool kid. And, that's just a shame because I think the problem with kids is they do it, but they don't know how to go far enough. They don't know when to stop, when to cut it off. They don't know when it's possible. You got to turn it off. You can't do that now. Turn it on at a certain time, and they don't have the discipline to do that. So kind of give us a background of who you are, what you were doing, and when did the light come on for you and you kind of switched? Because I'm reading a book right now, one of the books. I'm reading your book, but for Valentine's Day, my wife bought me a book by John Maxwell. If you know anything about John Maxwell, his books are, like, phenomenal.
Okay.
And one of his ones is called Thinking for a Change, about changing your thinking. And when I'm reading the book, I'm thinking about you and your book, and I'm going, that's what it was. So just tell us, what you were into, what you were doing, and you grew up a little bit, and then just tell us, when did you change? What sparked your change?
Absolutely. Well, what happened was when I'll take you back to the whole essence. When I was born, my name was originally James Crummell. And at that time, my biological father, he didn't want to have anything to do with us, so he signed over his rights. Well, my father, that I look at as my father, he came in and he said, hey, I adopt these boys, and we took on his last name, so my name became James Williams. And I think a little part of me was always kind of searching and wondering, why did this man not want to have me? So I wanted to be recognized. And I think it started there, but that wanting to be recognized by him also made me want to be recognized by people that I was around. I wanted people to like me or love me because there was something missing. Why am I not good enough? So when I was living in Fall River, Massachusetts, we lived in an impoverished environment. And my mom and dad would always tell us, go to school, make good grades, get a college degree, and do what Jesus wants you to do, live right. So while we're doing this, I'm watching my parents, and they're living this lifestyle. I'm watching them struggle. We eating Spam, potty meat, sardines, oodles and noodles and all of this stuff, and I'm just wondering, why is things not quite getting better for them? And it's not like we ate this every night, but it was a lot of nights that we had to eat this way, and we was living around other impoverished kids. And I realized a lot of those kids wasn't interested in making good grades. A lot of them was interested in being cool, being able to fight, having girls, and things of that nature. So what my parents were telling me really didn't resonate with what I was experiencing in my environment. So when I went to school, I would get picked on. I was short, and I wasn't that big, so the kids would pick on me. And once I started getting into fights, and people were like, hey, this dude could fight, or this dude getting in trouble and doing all this stuff, I started getting respect, and I liked the way it felt. So even though I wanted to be like what my parents wanted me to be, it was cooler to be accepted by my peers. So what happened is once we left Fall River, I continued to carry on this mentality to where I got to be bad or I got to be hard. And then going back to moving to North Carolina, moving around all African-American individuals, I thought I had to step the game up and be a little harder in the environment. So we get into more fights, and to make a long story short, I started trying to experiment with sex in the sixth grade. I started having sex in the eighth grade, and I started selling crack cocaine in the eighth grade. So by the time I even got 16, I had my first child, ran away from home. While I was away from home, I impregnated another girl, so I had two kids before I was even 17 years old. So, and I'm selling, at the time I had stopped selling crack and I was selling marijuana. So all of these things, all of these behaviors, it started getting worse. But the only thing that was sort of saving me and keeping me kind of balanced was I was real good in sports. So I was getting recruited by East Carolina University, West Virginia University, and Fayetteville State. So I would try to make sure that I maintained decent enough grades to stay eligible. But when I ran away from home, my GPA dropped. And when my GPA dropped and my SAT scores didn't correlate, I couldn't get a scholarship. But my parents, being the good parents that they are, they decided, hey, we're going to pay for you to go to college. I went to a Division III school, Methodist College up in Fayetteville. And when I was up there, I came in with this imperious, cocky attitude to where I should be starting because I'm a Division I athlete. And my coach didn't start. And he said, I don't care how good you are, with that attitude, you'll never play for me. So what registered in my mind when he said that was, wow, you know, if people don't like you, you're not going to get anything in life, get anywhere in life. So it was always in the back of my mind, but I was also mad and I was angry because I thought, well, wow, if I don't go pro in football, well, what can I do? I know my parents tell me a college degree, but I never seen anybody with a college degree and really use it, and it works. So to me, I thought it was easier to go pro than get a college degree. And a millions of kids think like that, and that's the scary thing. So while I was up there, I started hanging with these guys that was blood. And they were always making me have the gun. I had a .22, and we're going out every single night. I always got a gun. We in the clubs. I got it in my Nautica boots. So when we up in Durham one night, almost took this guy's life. The guy's running to the truck, and he's like, hey, yo, go ahead and shoot that dude. And they saying some other words. And I'm sitting there like, man, I don't want to shoot this guy. But in the same sense, I don't want to be a punk, and I don't want to be scared with my boys. I told them I ain't afraid to do nothing. I ain't afraid to kill nobody. So now I feel like, man, I got to honor these words. So as this guy's approaching the truck, I'm praying to God that I don't have to shoot him. And at the same time, they yell and shoot him. So by the time I'm thinking about, man, I got to shoot this guy, they say, hey, no, that's my boy, man. But at that time, I realized I don't know what I'm capable of. So for me, that was the light switch. I said, you know what, I need to leave. I don't know who I am. I'm not J-Rock. I'm not a football player. I need to find out who God made me be. So I decided to join the Air Force. And when I joined the Air Force, I just opened my mind up to where I don't care if the person is white, black, Asian, or Hispanic. If they could teach me something and make me better about myself, I'm going to be willing. I'm going to be receptive to that. And that's what sort of started this evolution. For me, maturing from a boy to a man, and for me, maturing from a thug mentality to being a scholar.
Wow.
Well, I don't know if Jerry wants to ask a question, but Jerry, if you have a question, you can go right ahead.
Well, no, go ahead, Matt. Go ahead.
Okay. Because, you know, I give you a chance because I know you got some formulating and percolating.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask, though, is, and I think out of the story, I wanted to get this clear. And I wanted to point this out to people who are listening, is that I wasn't as bad, I wasn't as far where you were, but the thing that I grew up in the inner city of Detroit, so I can relate to the whole being around gangs, being around people, that's why I was around. I was just one of those kids that was such a freaking comedian and so funny. I could zone real good to the point where they would stick me on people to zone. And that would always keep me out of, that kept me out of having, I didn't have to shoot and kill nobody, nothing like that.
Absolutely.
And so that always kept me cool. Well, I was always hanging with them, so I never had to fight. So if somebody didn't like me, didn't dig me, it was like, and even if I did, you know, they weren't going to say nothing. They weren't going to say anything. They weren't going to say anything at all. So, you know, they weren't going to say anything. They were just going to talk and do, you know, do whatever they do. But they wasn't going to do nothing to me because it was like, that's my man. He's cool. That's my dude.
Exactly.
So it kept me out of a lot of trouble. But what I really wanted to say is the importance for me was that all the while that my mother had me on drugs, drugged me to church on Wednesday, drugged me to church on Friday, drugged me to church two times on Sunday, every week, and Fridays for youth service. When I got out on my own at 16, when I left my mother and went out, and I was doing my own thing too, that all that stuff came back, and I really want to make that point, and I know that you did too, and I wanted people to hear that. You know, I think that one of the most important things, you know, there are kids out here who think that, oh, I go to church, and even though you, as a young person, you think it doesn't matter, it's not cool to pray, it's not cool to you know, raise your hand, praise God. It's not good to read the Bible. It's not cool. That's a story. But I'm going to tell you, I don't care what nobody says. When you're a young person, that scripture where it says, raise a child in the way they should go and they will not soon depart from it, is a very true blue statement. So I just want you to speak to, you know, how often did you go to church? Was that a big part of what it was? And was that one of the things that kind of saved you? Because to me, I think God had a purpose and a plan for me, and that's why a lot of things missed it, shouldn't.
And I would definitely say my parents always, you know, raised us in the church. And I would say this. I felt like we was closer as a family when we was poor. Because we did read a lot at the table, the Bible, and all these things. My father made us remember the 23rd song, and I said it a lot of times when I got in trouble. I got in trouble in school, get suspended, got interrogated by the police. I will always say the 23rd song. So I always believed in God. I always believed in God. But I will say that I didn't think that I was good enough to really serve God. So, you know, we would go to church. I would sing in the choir. We'd do church plays. Church has always been a big part of my life, and I think that's the foundation. And I think it's that anchor, you know, that makes you always really feel guilty and be, you know, conscious of the fact that, hey, I'm doing wrong and something is not right. So it never felt natural for me to sell drugs, to fight, to cut somebody out. It never felt natural. It was always forced. You know, it was nothing that I know God intended for us to do. So church was always a big part of my life. My father is actually the pastor right now. So church played a significant role. And I think even when I was in the military, when I started working towards worldly success, getting my degree, I realized that it was something I was still missing. So that was at the age of 22, that's when I gave my life back to Christ, and I started trying to live right. And it's not one of these journeys that I never sinned. You know, to this day, I feel like I'm growing in that aspect. I'm growing as a man. I'm growing as a thinker. It's something that you got to be aware of daily and always try to keep God first in the morning. So God played a significant role in my life, and I think it's why I'm still here. I think it's why God never allowed me to be a part of the judicial system or to, you know, to be dead or shot up or anything of that nature.
Well, let me ask you this question.
Yes, sir.
You were talking about you were selling marijuana, selling crack, was involved in a gang, the Bloods. How in the world, and then you were doing a lot of fighting in school, and you fathered two kids, how in the world did you avoid getting drug into a deeper thug life and avoid jail? I'm amazed that you didn't mention at all that you didn't spend any time in jail were doing.
Absolutely, I spent no time. And it's funny, it's ironic. I'm the only one of my brothers, besides my younger brother, to never be arrested or spend a night in jail. And I think it's because of this. I really believe God had a higher purpose for my life. When I was 14, I remember when I was 14, I shot a gun. I shot a .38, and it was at this public golf course right near our neighborhood. And nothing ever happened. You know, the cops came around asking people questions. Nothing ever happened. When I got into a fight and I assaulted this kid, the cops came over, they questioned. Nothing ever happened with that. And it just seemed like God was always there protecting me. I don't know if God felt like if I got into that system, because God knows everything, maybe I would have stayed in that system. Because anything I did, I was always aggressive about it. I'm going to try to do it the best. But I always had a little bit of hope because of the fact that I didn't go to prison. And when I left college, this is the funny thing. When I left college, I said, I'm joining the military, but I don't need to go back to Wilson, North Carolina, and I don't need to stay in Fayetteville. So I asked my uncle, I said, hey, can I ride on a truck with you? I don't feel safe. I don't trust myself. I need to be around, you know, somewhere else. So even while I was with my uncle on a truck, I used to have his gun. And we'll go to cities, and I have my red bandana out my right pocket, and I would go to Seattle and Dallas and go to places. And it was so idiotic, and it's the dumbest thing. It's suicide because I'm going to cities that I don't even know, and you could tell that God just had to protect this little dumb kid walking around these cities where somebody could have easily blown my head off or done anything, but I'm walking around thinking I'm bad. And it just let me know that when I was at a club taking my shirt off, you know, bouncing around, getting into fights, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm bad, and nobody twitched me in the parking lot afterwards, it was nothing but God. God just had a greater plan for me, you know, and that's the only, I mean, it's like you can't really make sense of it. I think about when I had my two daughters, and I'm sitting here like, man, how in the world can I take care of them? I can't even take care of myself, and what am I, and I never owe back child support. You know, so it's like God just allowed everything to work in my favor, and it's just hard to explain. The only thing you can say is God. You know, now I have a PhD. I have two doctors. You know, so it's just God, man. It's amazing that he chose me to be this vessel to do his will, and it's beautiful.
I mean,
I want to ask this question too, because when you had talked about you being in a school environment and this female allowed a male to squeeze her her butt and she didn't respond to it. Well, you didn't tell me and you didn't allude to the fact that it did. What you talked to her, you talked to the guy. Did anything change between any of those two people? Did they have a different attitude, or did you help sway them, or what?
You know what? I think I planted a seed. Actually, and it's a funny story, the girl actually ended up getting pregnant. And I told her at the time during the conversation, I said, if you don't change, you're going to end up getting pregnant. She got pregnant. But she called me and my wife and I, last year and said, you know what? I'm graduating, and I'm going to college. So, to me, it was a blessing to where she went through the situation where she got pregnant, but it didn't ruin her life. So, a seed was planted. And the thing that I'm realizing, you know, Jesus came down here and gave his life on the cross. And some people still choose not to follow him. And I realize I can't save anybody. Only thing I can do is plant seeds and spread love and do what God allowed me to do. And do it from a non-judgmental stance to where, look, I love you. This is what the Bible says. This is what I believe. And this is how I think this could change your life. It's up to you to accept it. God give us free will. You know, so I felt like it did plant a seed in her mind. But I don't know if it didn't necessarily change her in that current situation. I think it made her think about it a little more. And it's just like us. You know, when I was younger, people would tell me things, and I act like I don't care, but it's in the back of my mind. You know, so even if I'm out in the street, I don't go as hard as everybody else. You know, I had in my mind I'm not selling to everybody. And what made me stop selling crack, and I want kids to really understand this, anybody that's watching this show, what made me stop selling crack, it wasn't the fact, the fear of going to prison, even though I never wanted to go to prison. It was the fact when I sold crack one time, it was this guy that came to me, and he had his two kids standing behind him. And I was 13 years old, and I saw the power that this crack had over this man. And I told this man in so many profane words, go take your kids home. And this guy came back in 10 minutes. It seemed like 10 minutes. Could have been less, could have been a little longer. But he came back very fast. And I was like, wow, this guy, it got this much control over him. And then my cousin later on got addicted to crack cocaine, and I said I could never be a part of it again. And I justified selling weed because I was smoking weed. But it still didn't make that right neither.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, that's amazing. All I can say is I can speak to that, Jeffrey, as far as the God thing, because I knew God had a hand on my life. There was, I mean, being in church the way I was, I mean, I was deep in it. I mean, everything you could do in church, I did. Bible study, knew it backwards and forwards, everything. And, you know, I can tell you there are many times I know. I mean, God literally reminded me, like, you don't know how close today you could have been gone. Today you could have been. And I wasn't doing even close to what James was doing. I was just being stupid. I mean, I didn't spend the night in jail. I spent a night in a holding cell in a suburban jail with plexiglass. That's not jail. And that was enough for me. It was like God knew. If I get your behind caught on this shoplifting thing, it was almost... Now, I don't know. See, here's the thing. I don't know if James... James is a little opposite to me. When I did something, I always got caught. Everybody else would get away with it, I'd get caught. And I'd be like, oh, this worked. I'd be like, oh, dang it. You know, and after a few years of that, you start to realize, like, dude, everybody's doing this. Every time you do it, you're like bad luck schlep rock. Like, you can't do nothing. Like, if somebody walked in the store and steal a bag of potato chips, slip it in their coat, you just happen to be the guy that your dumb tail just did it in front of the camera, and then you get caught. And that's
yeah.
it. And for me, it was God's grace was always, you're not,
absolutely.
God always said, you're not going to get away with anything.
And look, I'll tell you this, man. You know, God said foolish behavior will even bring, you know, more trouble in your life, right? So I think about when I got pulled over by the police one time in a bad neighborhood. I had maybe an ounce of weed on me, and, you know, and you could probably smell it in the car. And we got pulled over, and I told my brother, I said, hey, throw it over the weed, you know, and everything. And a cop came up to the car, flashing the light. And I tell you, and the reason why I'm telling this story, I'm showing how these brothers are very intelligent, even these brothers that's out there committing these acts, and they could be doing a great thing. So he pulled me over, and he asked me some questions, and I said, sir, I said, I made a wrong turn. I don't even know why I'm in this neighborhood. I said, I'm coming from football practice, and I'm scared to death. I shouldn't even be around here. Can you escort me out of the neighborhood? Now, if I would have approached him, like, who the F are you? Why are you harassing
exactly.
me and all this stuff? I would have brought more trouble to myself. And this is
right.
not telling brothers how to get away with stuff, but it's showing that in everything you do, you got to be intelligent, right? And if you can be a hustler on the street, you can be a hustler for life. You can be a hustler for Christ. You know, but a lot of us are so caught up in this mentality to where you're not cool serving God. But I think y'all brothers are cool, right? I think I'm pretty cool. And we need to show them that it's a different way, man, and not trying to badmouth the hip-hop culture, but a lot of it is negative. And it's perpetuating this dumbed-down mentality or this thug mentality, and it's keeping our brothers, you know, outside of the game of life that they should be in. I spoke at a prison the other day, and it was so disheartening to see my brothers in there, but it was also very enlightening to see how well they pronunciate their words and articulate their words. And to me, it was a humbling experience. And I just realized, it's our job to make sure that we save these individuals from going to prison or from going back to prison.
Absolutely. And I know Jerry's a big believer in that. I am too. And I mean, I really think that, you know, like I said, just like when I started this show on my own, I never knew where I was going to go with it. But, you know, I had Jerry with me, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and do this, and I'm going to just have some fun with it and do this. And now I take the show a lot more serious, and now I have more guests, and I try to talk about things, and I try, and God has shown me to use this to try to get good guests with some, you know, just give people perspective. And the one thing I like about this show, and Jerry will tell you, is that I believe, you know, people need to see people's process and stop seeing just the result. In other words, if you see a guy with a nice car and a nice house, find out how he did it. I don't want you just to admire the house and the car. How did you do it? What's the price you paid? And for you to be where you are, people see the book, people see you and say, oh, man, that's just great. And it's like, but if you don't know the story behind the man and what he did, you know, you can't understand. So, you know, I commend you for changing like that. I don't know if Jerry has any other questions, but
I'm simply amazed because most young black men that get caught up in the thug life, that get caught up in a gang like the Bloods or the Crips, that get caught up selling drugs regardless of what type of drugs they sell, don't normally get out of that. They stay in it and they stay in a cycle of in and out of jail, and up until the time either they start taking their own product, or they planted 6 feet under.
Yeah.
So, I'm simply amazed that what you chronicled about your early life, that you got two doctorates and an associate professor at a university. I'm amazed.
I
commend you.
Thank you so much. I'm going to tell you this, and then I'm going to piggyback on something that Max said about, you know, asking people questions, because I'm a big believer in that. But even with the, you know, being able to not get caught up in the mentality, I'll tell you one thing that I think my parents did very well for us. We never was caught up into name brand clothes or feeling like if I got Jordans on or I got a starter jacket, I'm something special. Never been caught up in that. See, my problem was I was caught up in I want to please people and make people like me. So once I was able to break away from that, it wasn't the money I was chasing. It wasn't the money. I was chasing the fame, the attention. I wanted to be known as a thug. So I wasn't in it for, oh, man, I need to survive with doing this. Because when we moved to North Carolina, we was middle class. We still didn't have quite as much money. But it was never about the money. It was always about I want people to like me. So so I could easily walk away from the money, you know. I just wanted people to think I was hard. And with some of these brothers that get on drugs, you know, because a lot of people say, how do these people get on drugs? Well, most people are not hard 24/7. Most people, unless your soul is gone, right? Because you talk to a lot of brothers that's in the street that have been in prison, and you're like, man, it's a good dude. Most people have their soul. So if you murder somebody or you sell drugs to people and you know it's destroying their family, you got to deal with those thoughts when you're alone at night.
Right.
Everybody has to deal with those. And unless you have that relationship with God, it's hard for you to distinguish between a sin and a sin, and it's hard for you to distinguish between the spiritual realm and then what's happening in the natural realm and how God is so loving that he forgives all of those sins, right? So if you're not connected to that, you got to deal with your thoughts. So a lot of people mask that with drugs to try to hide that guilt and that pain. And then when you're doing that, you're killing your brain cells and you're killing a little bit of your soul, so it makes you a little bit more harder and willing to go out there and do a little more. So a lot of these brothers end up becoming truly lost, and that's why it's hard for them to break away. And then something that Max said, when Max said you got to be willing to ask, I'm a firm believer in that because I never saw what a degree can do. When I was with my uncle out on the road, I went to this guy house. He had a huge house. We was out in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And I asked the guy, I saw his degree on the wall. I said, so, sir, does your engineering degree get this house for you? And he said, well, the degree didn't give me the house, young man. He said, but what I learned in the process of the degree helped me be successful on my job, and I eventually made more money to get this house. He said, but yes, I did need a degree to fill a requirement to get the job. And I said, wow, degrees really make sense. But see, what happened in our community, our parents, a lot of us are first generation, you know, degree graduates of a bachelor's degree, and we're just told get a degree. But a lot of us don't even know what to get a degree in, or we don't even chase what are we absolutely great at. What makes us happy waking up in the morning? So we get a degree, we don't like it, or we get a degree that doesn't really make us a lot of money just because nobody really schooled us to the game, you know, or we don't realize that you can use your degree because you have transferable skills to go into another area. Now you just know how, need to know how to sell yourself, and we don't really realize, yo, we can really get nice houses and cars with these degrees, but a lot of us are caught up in the consumer mentality. I got to get a lot of nice clothes and things and look like I have money, where a lot of them, they're willing to sacrifice on the clothes and the shoes and put stuff into what they really have that's going to appreciate and really add true value to their life. So we need to educate them on a lot of fronts. And I feel like it's a big gap in our in the African-American community in that regard.
Right. Wow. And I wholeheartedly agree with what you said there. Because one of the things that I just think that, and I tell kids this all the time, either in middle school or in high school, I tell them, I say, find what you could do. I always tell them, find what you would do for free and make it something that you get paid for. Because whatever you would do for free, you get up every morning, and if you did nothing else, you did this for nothing. You just find happiness in this. This is what makes what you're good at. This is what makes you happy.
Absolutely.
Do it. I said, that's the thing you need to get your degree in. And there's not a degree in everything sometimes you do, but there's somewhere you can either get a degree and it can lead to that or what have you. The other thing
that's
I tell kids, too, is you have to be able to a degree is good opportunity. A degree doesn't guarantee you an opportunity, but if you get a degree, it gets you interest. Once you
that's
get
right.
into an instance, then it's your work ethic, it's the way you think, the way you articulate, it's who you are. And the other thing that I think kids need to be taught, too, is they're not realizing their habits. And I spoke
that's
to
right.
some kids the other day in the classroom, and I told them, I said, the problem with you guys is that you think that when you get to college, I'll just turn this light switch on, and now all of a sudden I'll
wow.
be this great student. Now I'll start
wow.
doing this again.
Yeah.
I said, but what you don't understand is you have a habit of coming to school of coming to class without a pencil, without paper. You have a habit of coming to school without your notebook and you left it in your locker, because what you really want to do is play the game of, I want to get out of class so I can go play around while I go get the stuff out of my locker. You don't have your book and you don't have your homework. And I'm sitting there going, like, I'm like, okay, so what's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen when you get to high school? This to the middle school kid. So for 4 years, you're going to keep doing exactly what you're doing now because you're in a habit. Until you change your thinking, if you make a decision to start doing something different, you're going to be in this. And for high school kids, you know, I said, I don't know, what, if you're this lazy now, I'm talking about pure, this generation, I have never seen, maybe Jerry has, maybe we were not this, I know our generation, my generation was not that lazy. We weren't that lazy. These kids were kids, and you probably seen it in your classroom. They won't get up to go pass their paper, and they'll hand it to another guy going to break and say, here, take this up. And it makes me so mad. You know what I started doing? I started being like, no, get that paper back to him. Get up, bring the paper up here. Because if you don't, I'm encouraging you, I'm allowing you to do that. And I'm just saying, and I guess what I'm basically saying is, people don't realize how much habit is. And I told them, I said, the light doesn't come on when you get first year college. Whatever you've been doing the last 4 or 5 years, you're going to do the same thing when you get to college.
I agree.
You're going to come to class without book. And you're going to wonder, why can't I remember to bring my book? Why can't I? And you're going to think it's you're forgetting, or you're going to think like, I got to remember, I got to write it down. No, you're in a habit, and you got to change it. But the only way you change habit is your thinking. And what's the, let me say this last point. What is the main thing? I ask both you guys this question because I think you can do it. What is the main thing that stops us from changing our thinking? What is the number one thing that stops us from changing our thinking? Do any of you guys know?
Well, I think the biggest thing is fear.
You said what?
Fear and complacency, and that kind of go hand in hand.
What do you think, Jerry?
Well, I think it's yourself. I mean, your confidence in yourself, being able to achieve anything that you want to achieve.
You hear me?
And that's rampant throughout the our community. So,
absolutely.
But what I learned was, it's feeling. So what you guys both said all come from feelings. Your feelings come from your thoughts. So if you don't never change your thought, you'll never change your feeling. You get up in the morning, the way you feel is based on your thoughts. So I guess what I'm saying is to change your feelings, you need to change your thoughts. But that's what I try to tell these kids is, instead of, why don't you just get the paper, get the book, bring it to class. But you got to get a habit. Because I think you might know this statistic, but don't they say it takes 30 days to get into
a habit?
30
days to change your habit, yeah.
But there it is. And these guys just don't do it. So, you know, with that being said, I just want to speak to that and just say that, you know, even in my sub work, I've been here trying to speak into kids' lives and telling them, like, the light don't come on, man. Whatever you are now, you're going to keep doing it because your thinking is where you're stuck in it. So I'm sorry, Jay. What did you want to say? I apologize.
Let me ask this, doctor. If you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
33.
Now, for those who are listening, this man went through a lot of trials and tribulations early in life, and he's got a BA, a master's, and 2 doctorates. I mean, it can be done. Let me put it that way. For those who you think, and I'm putting anybody who's listening, for those who think that it cannot be done, that you're in a state of that you can't accomplish things. This man that we have on today, you read his book, From Thug to Scholar, and read about what he's done before he decided to turn his life around. And 33 years old, and doctor, I'm telling you, I said it earlier in the show, and I'm saying it again, I've never met a guy that has done up until this point what you have done and to turn your life around from where it started from. I've never met a guy to do that, and I'm simply amazed.
And let me add this, Jeremy, to your audience as well. I want them to understand I graduated from high school, so I don't want people thinking, oh, you know, smarts, because smarts, it piggybacks off of what Max said. You know, I'm a big believer in metacognition. Be aware of your thinking, aware of your thoughts. Why am I doing what I'm doing? And then you also got to always have a proactive mindset.
Mm-hmm.
The decision that I'm making, is it the right decision? Is it the best decision? Is it going to help me in the long run? So when I graduated from high school, I graduated with a 2.1 GPA. When I got kicked out of Methodist College, I had a 1.9 GPA.
Ooh.
And when I decided to go back to school, I had a 3.68 GPA. I graduated cum laude. Then I went to my master's program, had a 3.4. Then my first doctorate, I had a 3.8. And then my PhD was a 3.9. And I did this while maintaining the family. I played some professional arena football in between that. I was working jobs. So the thing is, we can't put in our mind and make excuses. As long as we got God and we got belief in ourselves, we can do whatever we want to do. We just got to tell ourselves it's a must. I got to do it. It's no questions asked. And I want some of my Southern church people to believe this too. I'm not a big believer in just saying, well, I'm going to get my riches in heaven. No. God never intended for you just to get your riches in heaven. Because
Amen.
He wouldn't talk about King David's will. He wouldn't talk about King Solomon's will. He wouldn't talk about all these things if it wasn't important or if he didn't want us to be blessed on this earth. So we need to stop using it as a cop-out. It's a form of laziness, and we just need to be willing to work and say, look, I got to do this. There's no questions asked.
The formula has never, God never changed the formula. The formula was always, ever since he told Adam, it was always work by the sweat of your brow.
That's right.
He changed it and said, by grace, I'll still help you and make it easier for you.
Absolutely.
You still have to work. God ain't going to just drop, like I said, I tell people all the time, money don't drop out of trees.
That's right.
And here's what I said to somebody the other day, and I put it on Facebook one day, and I said, isn't it funny? And Jerry might get a kick out of this, but I said, isn't it funny? And it's just a random thought, but I know it's the truth. Isn't it funny? I said, everything that destroys us and everything, people, Christians and everybody says money is the root of all evil, which is really quoted wrong. It's the love of money.
The love
that
of
is
money. Yes.
All evil. But here's the funny part, and people always crack me up with this when they say, you know, pastors have money, you know, they shouldn't have money, they should be poor in effect. Look, man, Jesus was rich. That's number one. That's the number one thing that people don't believe. There's no way you can tell me that man wasn't rich when you have a treasure. There's no way you can be poor when the guards are gambling over your clothes. So let's take that out. But more importantly, this is what I said. Isn't it amazing that everything that destroys our life, we can find it plentiful? We can find weed, plentiful. We can find heroin. We can find liquor. We can find everything in the world to destroy us. It's plenty of it. But what's the hardest thing for us to find? Money. Don't you understand? And I told him, I said, don't you understand that if money destroyed us, do you understand that Satan would have had it on our lawn? We would find money everywhere.
Yeah.
It'd be readily available to us.
That's true.
And people don't think about that. I'm like, dude, money is not evil. Money is the key. God put money on here for us to get rich. Why? He didn't put it on it for us to be rich so we could just be partying and swinging and saying, I got some swag. He did it so that we, because of who we are, as good people, Jerry, you, me, so we could bless others. God wants
us
to take that wealth that you have, Jerry, and give it to that guy, that pregnant girl over there who needs your help, and tell her God loves her. That's us planting a seed. That's what this is all about. James was put in this position because there was a purpose and a plan that God had for Jerry's life. I mean, for James' life. Same thing with you, Jerry. Same thing with me. I believe there, honestly, there are opportunities that we have had that God puts us in a position to take care of others, to plant, like he said, a seed. We're not supposed to change hearts and minds, but at least we strike a nerve. At least we get a thought, and a thought can lead to so much more. So I'm just putting that out there that people need to understand. Money is not a bad thing. As a Christian, as a sinner, it is not bad. If it was and it destroyed our lives, remember, we would find it like we find coke, heroin, liquor, drugs, sex, everything else. And sex is not bad. But it's funny. the kind that's outside of the what God had is marriage, guess what? We can find that all day long. We can pay for it. We can find it. But it's harder to find the sex within a relationship, a committed relationship, and then carry on a decent relationship. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So all I'm saying, so what I'm basically saying is people need to realize that the things that are easily and readily available to us are usually the things that hurt us. The things that are hard to find are the success and things like that, we got to work for it. We can't find
that's
it. You get shortcuts, but it'll lead you in the wrong direction. So I just wanted to kind of like piggyback on what you said on that. And I don't know if Jerry has anything else to say, but I'm going to tell you this. You are probably, James, I can say this, you're probably the most interesting guest I've ever had as far as Jerry.
Yeah.
I've never heard Jerry rave over a guest before. Not like this.
No.
Not like this.
I appreciate it, guys. Appreciate
you know,
it.
I still believe there's hope in our people. And with people like you, my man, that going through the things in early life and being able to turn yourself around, give me hope that our black young men have a future, not being in a type of thug life or the hip hop type of life that it puts them in a stereotype that's very difficult to get out of. And the mindset throughout the, I would say throughout the world, especially in the United States, of what a black man is and the type of mentality that supposedly most black men have. You give me hope because I've never met a guy. I have never, especially as young as you are, never met a guy that's done as much as you've done. And I hate keep regurgitating this, but I'm simply amazed at the type of things you accomplished from where you came to where you are now. And my other thing I got to ask you is, you got two young daughters. If you don't mind me asking, what kind of relationship do you have with them?
Well, I tell you this. I have four kids altogether. I have two daughters that was born before I got out of high school. So I got a daughter that'll be 18 in May, and I got a daughter that was 16 in December. And then my kids with my wife, my son is 12, and my daughter is 6.
Okay.
And I will tell you, you know, because I don't believe, and this show is about being real. My daughter, me and my oldest daughter, we don't have the greatest relationship because there's some things that I can't quite agree with. You know, I can't quite agree with her lifestyle, certain things, certain guys she dates. So I try to show her love, but it's certain information she doesn't want to hear, and I just let her know all the time, "Hey, Dad loves you. Anytime, you know, I'm gonna be here." So the relationship ain't the greatest right now. My 16-year-old daughter and I, we have a good relationship, but it's still some things that she does that I'm not too happy with. But it's very understandable. She's coming from a different household with different expectations and different values. And I can't, when I have my daughter, just chastise her and be the father. Oh, you got to do this because it's not right. And that's not great for our relationship neither.
Right.
So my two kids and my wife and I, we minimize how much TV they watch. We minimize... when they watch TV, I sit down with them and explain certain things to them, how much video game time they play. So they probably maybe watch maybe 2 to 3 hours of TV a week, you know, and then they read a lot. They love to read, and they find a lot of creativity in doing things around the house. So they're very creative. So my wife and I agreed that we're going to try to raise them a little different than the way we was raised. We still instill and show God in their life, but we also try to challenge them to think and make them really understand that having a relationship with God is about love. It's not about being afraid that you're going to go to hell. We want them to really try to think for themselves and make wise decisions. So we do things a little differently. But with my two daughters, and I'm a firm believer, man, everything will come around eventually, you know, as they get older and they get out of, you know, certain toolage or things that they're dealing with, our relationships will be strong. But right now, definitely with my oldest, is not the greatest. And, you know, she's in a different game that I was in when I was younger. So it's a little different. It's a little challenging.
But, I mean, for me, like I said, I always say the thing that always gets kids is, you know, one of the things that I have with my daughter is, you know, I love my daughter, but my daughter, I mean, she's just so far into her life in college. She don't call or nothing. It used to drive me nuts. You know, and one day I just told her, she was like, please go through that. Let her go through her thing. you know, when she comes back to you, then you let her know. You know, that's not acceptable to call me only when you need some of this or that. But, you know,
exactly.
You gotta love her. So, you know, every now and then I text her, you know, I may not get a call back. It's not that she's angry. She just, they into, you know, we good, but she just into what she want to do. But she don't believe in calling, but then you call me when you need something. So for
absolutely.
Me, you know, I just, you know, like I told my wife, I said, the problem with her is, I said, when the life gives her the wicked 1-2 punch, that's when she'll come around. That's always it. When life gives you the left and the right to your face, then you always go, oh, my God. You know, and the first person they come running to is the parents. And so you just have to pray it. You have to pray over them and everything else. But, you know, one of the things I did, and James, you'll probably understand this, is that one of the things that the Lord spoke to me about before my daughter, and I had never heard this before, had told me to do, is the day she graduated. It was the day after her graduation, before she went to college. And God had me, my mother, who was a grandmother, and my wife, we all were in the living room because her mom was going to work. And we came over and we saw her before we left. And I anointed her head with oil and prayed over her and laid my hands on her, prayed for her, because God had told me to do that. And I can tell you, ever since I've done that, she's never had a problem with anybody.
Well,
And I can actually rest, because before she left, I had a lot of anxiety about that, you know, about missing my baby, she's gone, this, that. But I'm going to tell you, when I did it, I had peace. And ever since then, we're now into year two, and she hasn't had any real problems or issues, or, you know, nothing's come to my attention. And I just rest in the fact that I know God's taking care of her, because I knew I couldn't be there. She's all the way in West Virginia.
Yeah.
I'm here in Maryland. And I can't be there every day to don't do that, don't do this. And to be honest with you, I don't want to. You know, that's too much of a fight. That's like wrestling. So I just want to say there is hope, you know, for
appreciate
them. You just have to pray God will protect them. And then when the wicked one, two, it's not as bad, and they go, okay, I woke up now. So that's what I would say to you. But, you know, to Jerry's point, you know, I say the same thing, man. I hope our young black men out here do it. You know, I just think part of the problem with our young black culture, though, and Jerry is probably old school like me, a lot of problems is the parents. They're not disciplining their kids. They don't want to spank their kids. We used to get our asses whooped. I mean, we used to get our asses whooped. I'm proud to say I'm a card carrying member of the mama kicking my ass. My mother had a PhD in whooping ass. You want to talk about what you think is abuse? My mother never, ever, 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 James, whipped clothes. That was her number one thing. She said, I ain't whooping no clothes. When you got a whooping in my house, you took everything off. I'm talking about.
That's how my parents was.
And what? Take everything off, stand in the middle of the room, and I'm a whoop. And as I lash you better not move, and you better not cry. Because if you do, it's going to last long. And you stood there, and you took it. And I'm going to tell you, I don't care what nobody says. The problem with parents is that they talk too much. There's no repercussion, there's no pain. There's no pain. Because let me tell you, I wasn't scared of my mother. But I wasn't scared of my mother because I thought she would do something to me. I was afraid of the lash. The lash, the L-A-S-H. I was afraid of the lash. We ain't played with that lash. Like I'm going to be honest with you, I never. Like, these kids got their parents coming to the school and all that. Man, I wish my teacher would tell me she was calling my mother. Oh, we good. We good. You ain't going to hear from me the rest of the day. We good.
Right.
We good.
I know that's right.
I know I ain't want my mama showing up. Oh, no, sir. That's embarrassing to the city. Like, they'd be talking about that. They would have been talking about that to right now. They'd be like, remember when your mama, no, you ain't going to have me up on the poster talking about, this is an example of a man who got his ass whooped at school. No, sir. Never. My mother only came to parent-teacher conferences, and if I was screwed up, I got it at home. You ain't never seen me. You would never see me, my mom up there with some shoe whooping my tail up in the hallway.
No, I know that's right.
So I just think, I mean, to be honest with you, it's permeated all through society. There's no repercussion. I'm in coaching.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Basketball players, and I hear little. This is what I literally heard the other day. A basketball player, a ninth grader, came to me. You know what he said to me? Now, this is from our generation. He says, you know what makes me mad about Coach so-and-so? And I know the coach. And I was like, yeah. He was like, nobody on this team, they late or they do this, they don't get punished.
Wow.
This is from a 12-year-old. This is from a 15-year-old who does not like the fact that there's no repercussions. There's no discipline. Now, how you like that? And I'm looking at him going like, are you serious? And I'm going like, wow. I mean, he's going to play on my summer league team this year, and I'm just like, are you serious? Like, and that's what I'm saying. I'm finding out that kids want discipline. They talk good, like, my mom ain't going to do nothing, this and this and that, but they want it. Inside, they want their mama to say no. Kids are born with an instinct to know yes or no. They know what's right from wrong. And parents don't realize this, is that you're doing your kids a disservice. It's got to be repercussions, man. It's got to be. If you don't have repercussions, if my mother had talked to me, I'm going to tell you right now, I can admit. I don't know if y'all can admit this. I can admit this. Had my mama talked to me as much as these parents talked to them, I'd have been a criminal. You wouldn't even know
yep.
me.
Absolutely. You're right.
That's right. Because my mother would have talked to me and told me, man, punishment? A punishment? Man, I wish my mother, man, do you understand how happy I would have been if my mother told me go to my room?
I know that's right.
There's no time out. There was no time out.
Nah, just let the bill.
Time out. You know what time? I'm going to tell you what time out was. Time out was you keep doing something in the house, and you know what my mother would say? Get the F out of my house. Get out. Get out. And you were glad. You was like, for real? Get out. And I don't want to see you till the lights come on. Yeah. And you better not come back in the house. You got to go to the bathroom. You better go to your friend's house. If you're hungry, you better have some money. You better go over to your friend's house and eat. Mm. But we went outside. We actually found creative crap to do. We used to play baseball in the morning, basketball in the afternoon. Man, by the time the streetlights came on, we done had a fight. Went across town where we weren't supposed to be. Did something over there. Got into fighting some dudes over there. Came back. Played another basketball game. Played some cards. Threw some dice and came home. You had a good day. And you got your exercise. But these kids now, parents too busy. I ain't got time. I got to get to work. I can't do this. I can't do that. And I'm like, y'all crazy. Y'all out here trying to make it with the Joneses. My mother worked 22 years. I learned a lot of things from my parents, from my one parent. And all I'm saying to you guys, I agree with you guys, but I'm just saying this to all the parents out there, it's got to be y'all. It's y'all on the front line. You can pray to God all
you know
want.
What?
You got to put this to work.
They
got
to
put the question. And I'm just
saying something that's so true because you got a lot of parents that are chasing things, and they don't even know what they're chasing. That's the scary part.
Yep.
They're chasing this so-called American dream. We want to have a big house and all this. But for what? At what expense? Are you risking your child's safety? Are you risking educating your child to be better and leave a legacy? For what? And we really need to sit down and ask ourselves, why are we doing what we're doing? What is the real purpose of what we're doing? And the sad thing is when you see people in church, they have the same mentality. Because realistically, we're down here to spread the gospel.
Yep.
Money and all of this stuff, our family, that's just God saying, hey, I love you. I want you to have a little bit of fun while you're down here. But that's not what it's really about. You know, even this whole story is great, you know, what God did for my life. But it's really about spreading his gospel. You know, that's what it's about. And I got to be obedient to God and do what he desires for me to do.
Yeah, but what people don't understand, especially in the church and out of church, is that if you just do what God told you to do, if you just do the little, just the basic stuff that you do, take care of your home, you do that, God will take care of the money in the house and all that. You get that by because of the fact that you're obedient, you do that. That comes. But the problem with black, I'm gonna say black because I know Jerry always gets mad when I say this, but I just don't. To me, I'm not in the white community. I'm not living there. So I'm only talking about us. But I'll give you guys a good example. Last night, I worked, one of my jobs, I substituted in the day, but I actually have three jobs. So, and the reason why is because I haven't had a full-time job until I find one. This is what I do. So, I do food delivery service for a place called Food Scooter. And what we do is we go, a lady started this business where you go to major restaurants like TGI Fridays, Popeyes, stuff like that. And she signs deals with them, and we deliver the food to people's homes or work. Great service. But I can tell you, I don't know how many times I've been to great big houses, nice complex. I'm talking about what you're talking about. Nice big houses, brand new developments, whatever. Black people in there. You'll spend $70 on food and won't tip. And I used to get mad about it. And then you know what I realized? They're living paycheck to paycheck. Their house, they're house rich, but they're financially poor. They're one check away from disaster. Because when you can't, you can spend $70 on a meal and you don't tip nothing, I'm like, what difference does that make? And you don't know how many times a week, James, Jerry, that I go through this. I deliver this stuff to the people and they won't tip. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm not talking about one time, I'm talking about regular customers.
Wow.
And you spend $70 on famous days and you can't tip $3? You can't tip nothing? I'm just so ashamed of us, man, because we'd be the main one to do it. I mean, don't get me wrong, every black customer does it, but it's funny, I always sit outside the door when I get the stuff and I go, like this big old house with Yukon Denali in the front. Yeah, all this, you can't tip $3? And I didn't understand until one day God just told me, like, they're living paycheck to paycheck. They can't give you. They spent all they had on this, on material things. And you're right, we're always trying to keep up with the Joneses, and we'll wear the nice clothes and the shoes and stuff like that. But we're one missed paycheck away from disaster. And we gotta stop doing that. Black folks, we gotta stop doing it. We gotta be saving. We gotta put stuff away, and we gotta budget, man. We gotta say no to certain things, man. You don't have to have the biggest house. You don't have to have the nicest car, man. Man, James, you know I read books all the time. I read about millionaires. Millionaires ride a car for 10 years.
Yeah,
ride a car for 10 years.
You're right.
Those cheap bastards ride cars for 10 to 15 years. And when they paid that thing off, they still riding it. Us, we never stop paying a car note.
Yeah.
By the time we get through with the third, fourth year, we're going to trade it in and go get another. I'm like, are you serious? The car I got is a 2005. I paid that thing off. Man, I'm going to do everything I can to keep this thing running. Damn it. I'm going to keep it running till 2020. I'm like, I'm trying to keep this thing going. Like, I ain't trying to pay no car note.
Right.
You know, so I'm just saying, all of this, what you're saying, what Jerry's saying, all of it is about thinking. And changing our thinking and whatever.
Absolutely.
You know, we're at 750 or so, and I just want to leave everybody with you, James, having the last word. You know, whatever you want to speak to the audience, please speak to the audience. And, you know, I just want to thank you first and just say, man, I really appreciate you coming on, man.
Same here.
If Jerry has anything to do with it and I do, we got to have you back on. In fact, I'm going to have you back on after I finish the book and after Jerry finishes the book, because I'm sure Jerry probably ordered the book if I know Jerry.
Yeah. My question is this. Where are you able to purchase this book?
The book can be purchased at any Amazon online. You can purchase it online on Amazon or Barnes & Noble online. It's in selective Barnes & Noble stores. If you're around the JMU area, you buy it at our bookstore and Iowa State Bookstore. So, but primarily, the easiest way to probably get it is on Amazon or Hinduim Publishing House. You can buy it from our publisher as well. So, and then check out the recommendations, you know, the reviews, everything, and if you think it's something you may like, I think it's a book that's beneficial to everybody. Because the whole concept, really, of the book is mask. You know, we wear this mask to try to fit in and appease a certain group of people. And we're talking about my life as, you know, trying to be a thug to fit into this certain subculture. But it's no different, you know, and I parallel different stories as well in the book to where if you are an individual pursuing a degree because your parents want you to do it, but you hate it, to me, you're masked. And even if you decide to be a doctor and you wake up, you know, 30, 40 years later and you're 60-some years old and you say, wow, I hated my life for the past 30 or 40 years, and I was a doctor, and I made good money, and the world deemed you a success, you're really a failure because you didn't live your God-given purpose. And God has a purpose for all of us. Some people are meant to be a doctor. Some people are meant to be engineers, teachers, lawyers, whatever. Everybody has a purpose, and it is very important for everybody to find out what it is that God really designed for them to do so that they're not living this fictitious life and they're walking around as a charlatan, and they're really truly authentic, and they're walking in their God-given purpose, because whatever that purpose is, you got to trust that God would allow the money to come to you. And that's the whole concept of the book. Get away from, remove the mask, and start walking in your God-given purpose.
Well, Jerry, there you have it. I mean, I told Jerry, I told him, I said, Jerry, you're going to love this. Because when he texted this morning, I knew. I said,